Support for WMNF comes from our members in the Tampa Bay Arts and Education Network, connecting Tampa Bay with lifelong learning experiences on television, online, and face-to-face. Information at tbae.net. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with author Bob Tart about cats, particularly the cats at the center of his new book, Kitty Cornered. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is new music from King of Prussia with Arabian Thoroughbred here on Talking Animals.
Way to pretend our early spring town, my friend, Arabian thoroughbred, the fastest of all of them. Who'd have guessed an ending lovelier than yours? Afternoon on Sunday, some birds carried away with them the heartbeat of greater man. Return to us again, wise and oldest friend. If the world is keeping score, next time you'll be getting more. You can read it in the prophet's Monday pics. Never know for certain what gives a rider the chance to stay in circles and way ahead. On the road you must have savored every bump as you flew to the next one. Jumped a 20-foot canyon and left us imagining what your tomorrow brings, what you hear when we sing. If the world becomes a bore, give thanks you've been given more. Come hang with us again, my wise and oldest friend. If the world is keeping score, next time you'll be given more.
With Arabian Thoroughbred, animal song of sorts, to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, author Bob Tart, who writes wry, witty books chronicling the adventures and misadventures he experiences with various animals who live in and around the West Michigan home he also shares with his wife. His new book is Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. We'll discuss Kitty Cornered, the cats they're in, and more when we speak with Bob Tart in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Bob Tart's new book, Kitty Cornered. Also, later, we'll have a brief chat with Glenn Hatchell of Home Buddies and also a colleague here at WMNF who conducts shelter dog playgroups. So we'll find out about those playgroups and the way they help the dogs who participate later on in today's show. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Reed News Department. Our first item comes to us by way of AP and Dateline Columbus, Ohio. Pit bulls will no longer be labeled as vicious, quote-unquote, dogs under a new Ohio law. The measure took effect Tuesday. Changes the current law that defines a vicious dog as one that has seriously hurt or killed a person, killed another dog, or is among those commonly known as pit bulls. The new measure removes the reference to pit bulls from the definition and requires evidence to prove pit bulls are actually vicious. Governor John Kasich signed the measure in February. Some dog wardens opposed it because of frequent pit bull attacks. Others have said pit bulls are not inherently vicious, and so on. And Kasich will figure into another story coming up, in fact. It's an ongoing, disturbing, and unfortunately widening story. Diamond Pet Foods is expanding a voluntary recall to include its Diamond Naturals small breed adult dog, lamb, and rice form in the dry dog food manufactured on August 26, 2011 due to potential exposure to salmonella. No illnesses have been reported. The product was distributed in the following states: Colorado, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin. Florida was not specifically mentioned, but further distribution through other pet food channels may have widened that sphere. So pet owners may call toll-free at 1-866-918-8756, Monday through Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Find out more. Diamond Pet Foods says they apologize for any issues that may have caused pet owners and their pets. Locally here, you're feeling like doing a good deed, and you like animals, you like dogs, you like doing good things. We could match all those things up here. The Golden Retriever Rescue of Southwest Florida is seeking foster homes. And this time of year is sort of particularly important, you know, for placing fosters. People are on vacation. The snowbirds have flown the coop, etc. So they're really seeking people who would be specifically interested in, of course, fostering Golden Retrievers. And when you foster a dog under this... through this organization, they supply the veterinary needs, and you, the foster home, provide the love, the food, the toys, and you kind of keep them posted about the habits and personality of the dog, so that when they place a dog, they can make the right match. So, among others, they're looking to place in foster homes. There's Jake, who's 10. There's Dallas, who's 3, and Hogan, who's 7, all waiting for foster homes, and all three, I should note, are cat-friendly. So, you can read detailed information about the fostering experience and sort of what's expected on both sides of the equation by going to their the website for Golden Retriever Rescue Southwest Florida at grrswf.org. They're also on Facebook. And... you're also welcome to contact directly their foster coordinator, Lynette Malinchak. Email is Lynette, L-Y-N-E-T-T-E, at grrswf.org. Also locally, coming up, several locally owned independent pet stores have partnered with Canine Dental Service, Inc., and Dr. Kristen Swanson, holistic veterinarian, to host dental cleaning services in their stores using no anesthesia or drugs. As part of the service, every pet will receive a complete veterinary physical exam prior to their teeth cleaning. According to Dr. Swanson, routine teeth cleaning on pets should be performed every 6 months, just as with their human counterparts, since most pet owners do not want to expose their pet, their best friends to anesthesia and drugs that often. Most pets just go without proper dental care. So, hence these sessions that are scheduled coming up. Wednesday, May 30th at WAG from 10 to 3 p.m. Phone number there, 813-258-9181. Thursday, May 31st at Health Mutt, 10 to 2 p.m. Phone number there, 813-231-3137. And Saturday, June 2nd at Groovy Cats and Dogs from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Number there is 813-265-1333. Been tracking a story with our old friend Paul Watson, and a frequent guest over the years on Talking Animals. Thought I'd just read this update. Militant environmental group Sea Shepherd's leader Paul Watson on Tuesday suggested Japan was involved in his recent arrest in Germany as he vowed to continue his campaign against whaling. Watson is on bail while German authorities decide whether he can be extradited to Costa Rica on charges stemming from a high seas confrontation over shark finning in 2002. He's accused of putting a ship's crew in danger. That's all in quotes. The Canadian National is well known for its pursuit and harassment of Japanese whaling boats off Antarctica, which in recent years has significantly reduced the number of animals slaughtered. Quote, I find it very interesting that the extradition order was put in out in October 2011 at exactly the same time that the Japanese brought civil charges against us in a Seattle court, Watson told Australia's Channel 7. You know, Japan is spending a lot of money to try and stop us intervening against their illegal whaling activities in the Southern Ocean, and I wouldn't be surprised if Japan was part of this. Japanese Coast Guard said it has tried to, quote, locate, identify, or obtain information on Watson through Interpol, but would not comment on the case. The government of Japan has not received any official information about Mr. Watson's arrest or release. We are not in a position to make a comment, said a Coast Guard spokeswoman in Tokyo. We will continue to track that. Now, there's news aplenty of one kind or another from Ohio, including, of course, Zanesville. Including this one, law enforcement officials on Monday said that they were concerned about the recent escape of horses from an exotic animal farm. Horses escaped 3 days in a row at the farm owned by Marion Thompson. Nearly 50 exotic animals were shot and killed by authorities after they were released from their cages at the farm in October. Two primates, two leopards, and a bear held in quarantine by the state since October were returned to Thompson, to the Thompson farm earlier this month. Sheriff there said the horses escape from farms all the time around the area, but an investigation is now underway. It's a concern for us, he said, and goes on from there. And then, on a very related note, and as promised, Governor Kasich is in this story as well. It's Washington Post, but I think by way of AP. Legislation that would tighten regulations on owning exotic animals in Ohio was headed Tuesday to the governor for his expected signature months after authorities were forced to shoot dozens of lions, tigers, and other dangerous wildlife released from a farm last fall. The measure would ban new ownership of exotic animals while allowing current owners to keep their creatures by obtaining a new state-issued permit by 2014 and adhering to strict new caretaking standards. Facilities accredited by some national zoo groups would be exempt from the bill, along with sanctuaries and research institutions. Ohio's restrictions on exotic pets are among the nation's weakest. Efforts to strengthen the law took on new urgency after Terry Thompson released 50 animals, including black bears, mountain lions, and Bengal tigers from his eastern Ohio farm in Zanesville in October before he committed suicide. Authorities killed 48 of the animals as a public safety measure. Two others were believed to have been eaten by other animals. So this is Governor Kasich recalled the animal thing, saying it was unreported to public law and public officials weren't harmed. But next time we might be not be so lucky, however, which is why I committed to doing everything we can to prevent it next time, Kasich said, adding that he would sign this bill. All right, we have more if we have time later on in the show. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, involves animal-oriented comedy. Selected this piece with our chat, pending chat with Bob Tartt in mind. This is Sean Cullen with a part of a piece called Cats on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Well, I love cats. So my favorite... I have two cats. They're called Trouble and Danger. And they're little white, identical cat boys. And we used to have hamsters called Arts and Entertainment. But one day, Trouble and Danger got at Arts and Entertainment. Now we just have entertainment with no real integrity. And it's all, you know, it's sad. But my two cats, and this probably all cats do this, but I always found it really quite strange. When you're there and they have a litter box where they throw their candy wrappers and cigarette butts. No. You have your litter box and you scoop out the horror and filth with the scoop. You put it in a plastic bag and give it to someone. We exchange it all around my building. But, you know, and it's all fresh and clean, and you put in fresh litter, and it's all beautiful and pristine. Both cats leap in, squat down, and drill a stream of urine violently into the... And then walk out. Get a load of that little nugget. It's really strange. But I imagine what they're doing is just claiming their territory, you know? They're claiming their little place. And it'd be great if in life you could do that. You know, like some friend comes over with a car and says, "Hey, look, I just bought this new car. Oh, it's nice." It's mine now!
All right. That was Sean Cullen with part of a piece called Cats, taken from his CD simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, author Bob Tartt. As I noted earlier in the show, he writes whimsical accounts of what happens to Tartt, his wife, and various resident animals when some of those animals touch off a string of improbable episodes and mishaps and other actions and reactions. And where, for a time at least, it seems the fauna lunatics are clearly running the asylum there. His latest book of a critter-oriented memoir is Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Bob Tartt back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, Duncan. Great to talk to you again.
Well, likewise. Yeah, welcome back. It was November 2004 when we chatted about your book, Enslaved by Ducks. So, in fact, partly, I guess, maybe to get everyone listening sort of caught up and to establish maybe some sort of backdrop for discussing Kitty Corner, maybe we can start by asking you to kind of run down the non-cat animal population in and around your house.
Oh, okay. Right now we have two African gray parrots, two doves, a couple parakeets, and a rabbit. And those are indoors with the cats. And then outdoors we have 12 ducks, one hen, and five geese.
Wow. Okay. So, good size, the number of feathered friends. Maybe we'll come back to that point in a sec. But so I guess now, of course, it's only fitting that we try to also meet then the cats, who are also part of the population at Tartt Manor. So maybe you could just kind of give us a quick name or description of the feline side of things.
Sure. Right now I am sharing my chair. And when I say sharing, I'm confined to the last 2 inches of the chair.
Sure.
By our oldest cat, Agnes, and she is on the seat behind me. Agnes is about 17, and she's kind of the matriarch of the house.
Sure.
Franny is the extremely skittish stray, and she is kind of the main character of Kitty Cornered, because it's about really how we, you know, got Franny and how a cat that skittish was able to adapt to living with us.
Sure.
Maynard is our great big bed fixture of a cat. He had a visit to the vet recently and weighed in at 20.2 pounds.
Wow.
So he's kind of like a fur-covered propane tank.
Nice.
There's Tina, who's the mischief of the house, a yellow and black cat. And then Mubi is the cat who is a bionic cat for a while when she wears a cone in Kitty Cornered.
Yeah.
And Lucy, who is sort of a crocodile of a cat. She was famous for laying on her back and trying to nip us. So that's the cat population.
All right. Well, that's great. I mean, anybody who's read the book, of course, is familiar with this cast of characters and how they interact and how they don't interact. But anyway, so Kitty Cornered is, if I'm not mistaken, your third book, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So now, at what point in this burgeoning population of cats that you've just introduced us to, did you think, hey, there's a book here?
Well, what happened was Enslaved by Ducks was, of course, mostly about birds.
Yeah.
But also our very first cat, Penny, who's no longer with us, and then Agnes were also in that book.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So then in the second book, Fall Weather, our cat, Mubi, and also Agnes, they actually even got a little more space. And so it finally dawned on me, and it only took, what, about 10, 11 years, finally dawned on me that, you know, these cats really have a interesting and funny story to tell, and so I should tell it. So not just the story of Franny, but Kitty Cornered is also, as you say, it's about these other five cats and their relationship with us and how we've learned to get along with each other.
And Bob, since some of them kind of had appeared in earlier books, was there a particular incident or moment where you realized, hey, okay, these have been sort of bit players in the other dramas that I've produced, but these should have their own show?
I think once you get up to six cats,
yeah, okay,
it kind of hit me on the head.
Sure.
And also because we were just spending a lot of time with Franny because she was just so darned hard to get close to for a long time.
Yeah.
When she was a stray and we first saw her, you know, we're used to strays coming by and we'll go out and give them food. They'll back off a little bit or maybe disappear for a few minutes. But Franny was so shy that if she simply saw my face through the window, she was gone. And
yeah.
I mean, she appeared in the dead of winter to us. That's when she first came. And we would see her running all the way to the river, which is a good, you know, 600 feet on the straight line. So I know I'm not the most attractive person in the world, but I usually don't have that effect on fellow mammals. So, yeah, so it's been a very interesting experience with Franny. And I originally was just going to write the book about her, but, you know, all these other cats are clamoring for their story to get in there, too. And really, the story of one cat does turn into the story of five other cats.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and also, Bob, too, in describing kind of that last thing of Franny sort of hightailing it towards the river, I mean, in reading Kitty Cornered, it seems that a big factor in cats you know, sort of turning up one way or another, looking for a home, or maybe they're not necessarily some of them initially, but may well be sort of the location of your home. Maybe you could just talk a little bit more about where you live and kind of what sort of environs there are and you know, how that may figure into sort of making you and Linda magnets for cats that need a home or people who think, hey, this cat needs a home. Let's contact Bob and Linda.
Right. Linda and I joke sometimes that stray cats leave secret signs in the woods, sort of hobo signs, telling other stray cats, hey, two suckers live in that blue house. You can get a hand out there. We live in a woods, really our only neighbors are trees. We have one neighbor down by the river, but that's it. We're about, we're in West Michigan, and we're a good 2 miles from town. There's, you know, a few houses closer than that.
Sure.
So we're a little bit isolated. We don't get as many stray cats as people who live in the town or in a city.
Mm.
But they do appear. And when they do, I think they're especially needy because there just aren't other people right around us for going to feed them. So we always, you know, our hearts really go out to them and we try to try to help them.
Sure. Let me quickly just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're talking with author Bob Tart, whose new book is Kitty Cornered. If you'd like to ask Bob a question or offer a comment about cats or strays or his books, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So Bob, I mean, in terms of what you just said, do you think just the general area, not only immediately kind of around your house, but sort of closer to town, does there just happen to be kind of a larger overall population of strays sort of to begin with, and therefore, you know, that's partly at least why, you know, a good handful seem to find their way with the hobo signs or otherwise to your door?
I think the sad fact is that there's a lot of strays everywhere.
Yeah.
And my sister, Joan, is in Kitty Cornered, mm-hmm. and she lives in the middle of Grand Rapids. She has 12 cats, and those were all strays that showed up at her door. So we really only get one or two a year, and sometimes the ones that show up will feed them for a while, and they'll just stop coming. You know, we don't know what happens to them.
Yeah.
There was one last year who came that we actually live trapped because it was a very nice but extremely shy cat, and we found a wonderful woman in Lowell who has a huge barn that she's essentially turned over to stray cats, and she's built this outdoor pen for them too so they can go in and out, and she was just perfect for this cat that we had named Harriet that showed up last year.
Yeah.
And Harriet is just doing great with her.
Oh, good.
So, I just think it's just the sad fact of, you know, overpopulation and people dumping cats. Because Franny turned out to, we took her in to get spayed at one point, and it turned out she'd already been spayed.
Right.
So, you know, it's a little bit heartbreaking that someone would have a cat that nice and care enough about her to spay her, but then dump her or at least do something so that, you know, she abandons it.
Right. And again, if their own experience had been that she was a stray, then you know, tipping the ear or something so that procedure wouldn't be repeated at least would have been good. But I also, too, it seems like I agree that, you know, there's strays everywhere. But I wonder if also just the fact that some of them seem to be trying to take refuge at your house and elsewhere, you know, at least is affected part of the year by the winter and the harsh conditions versus, you know, let's say here in Florida or somewhere where, you know, there's tons of strays, but I mean, it's rare for, you know, the weather to be that extreme, for them as compared to your area of Michigan there.
Oh yeah, you are absolutely right because, our black cat Agnes, we first found her, I think in 95 or 94. And it was winter, and she was so hungry that she was eating sunflower seeds that had spilled from our feeder. And, you know, that's pretty tough to see. And so
yeah.
We just, you know, got her right away. And the same with Franny, that she was scavenging for food here. And, you know, cats are awfully darn smart. And Franny showed up in February when it was below zero. And as I told you, she always ran when she saw us. But then there was a day when there was a thaw, which we actually have occasionally in Michigan, and she appeared out of nowhere and started rubbing up against Linda's leg. We hardly believed it was the same cat.
Yeah.
She was on our porch by that evening, and it was just before the weather changed, and it really froze, and there was ice everywhere. So I wonder if she somehow knew this bad change was coming that would make things even worse. And plus, she had this infection or something on her face. It was this kind of discolored line that we had, kind of a blotch that we treated her with antibiotics. So I think it's a combination of the weather and, you know, she was just kind of at the end of her rope. And it's also possible, you know, these cats that do appear around us, that they probably try some of the other few houses around the neighborhood, if we can call it a neighborhood. Our nearest neighbor is about a quarter mile away.
Okay.
So it's possible they just try a lot of houses.
I see. Until they get the response they're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bob, now maybe I wasn't as attentive a reader as I should have been, but it wasn't completely clear. What was the time span during which you went from, Agnes, who's there with you as you do this interview, to the full six cat complement.
Right. We only had two cats by the time that Kitty Cornered starts. We only had Agnes and Mubi. So Kitty Cornered kind of starts in about 2005 or 6.
Okay.
And that's when we got Lucy. And then after that, we got Franny within a year of Lucy. And then in fairly short order, through unusual circumstances, we got Tina and Maynard. So I'd say we got the four cats within 2 or 3 years.
Sure, I got you. And Maynard, we should perhaps point out, came to you with a different name.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to address that.
Unfortunately, one thing that people do is who own cats is they don't plan a whole lot that they're going to keep these cats, you know, for the life of the cat. And so, you know, people move and then they find out they're moving to an apartment where they can't have a cat, or someone decides to get married and the fiance says, I don't want a cat. I tell the fiancé to take a walk.
Right, there you go, yeah.
But that's what happened with Maynard, is that this woman from my wife Linda's church didn't want her cat anymore because her fiancé said no cats. And this was a cat named Mabel, and it was an 8-year-old male. I'm assuming she named the cat Mabel when it was a tiny little kitten. So our first order of business was to give Mabel a more macho name, since he seemed to have kind of an identity crisis anyway. So, you know, Maynard sounds a little bit like Mabel, so
sure,
he adapted quite well. And I'm old enough to remember the old Dobie Gillis
sure,
TV show where
right,
Maynard G. Krebs was sort of the beatnik who liked to loaf all the time. And, you know, that's Maynard, so it was a perfect name.
Fitting,
him.
Yeah. Well, and I really responded to that in particular because we, among our cats, is a girl named Curtis, but again, sort of a feral when we first found her, and an orange tabby, and we, you know, had thought at least at the time, almost all those tend to be male, and we had named her before she, you know, we finally, you know, humane trapped her and got her into the vet, and then they called and said, hey, by the way, this guy Curtis is a girl. So, but we still kept it. I mean, there was sort of a running gag of a kid I grew up with named Curtis Farrell, and all tied in. So, and also their supermodel, I think, named Curtis, a woman. So we thought, well, let's stick. She seems kind of like a Curtis anyway. So.
Well, we have a male white Pekin duck named Thelma.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
You know, it's
good to mix it up sometimes.
Yeah, his friend is Louise, and so we thought, oh, heck, we're just changing a Thelma and Louise. It goes, you know, so well together.
Sure, sure, sure. So, Bob, I mean, one hallmark of this book, and really the previous ones, is that you sort of cast yourself as kind of the hapless hero. You sort of present yourself as kind of, you know, lazy and tired and, you know, not able to do much or accomplish much and never met a nap you didn't like, et cetera. Now, how much of this is just sort of useful fiction, and how much of this is something else?
Oh, well, if it was useful fiction, you wouldn't want me to admit to it, would you?
Well, I suppose.
Well, let's put it this way. You know, I'm writing comedy, mm-hmm. and so I'm exaggerating things.
Sure.
And obviously, if I was completely lazy, I would barely be able to fill out an envelope.
Right.
Address an envelope rather than writing a book. So, yeah, there's a little bit of embellishment.
I like to
ridicule myself.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, yeah, of course it does, yeah, require a certain amount of confidence and energy to write a book, much less, you know, this, as we touched on, is your third one. So,
plus to go through all the stress and back and forth with publishers. I tell you, that's a huge job just in and of itself.
Absolutely, yeah. So Bob, like, as these cats were sort of, you know, being added to the household, and again, you know, there was some wild episodes with Franny in particular and others. I mean, what would you say, you know, were some of the ways that you were changed by again, you'd had cats in the past, but never to this degree and never this kind of intricate sort of set of personalities. Well, you know, obviously, I'm sure Franny probably affected you the most profoundly. Maybe not. Maybe that's just, you know, because Franny was such the strong personality in the book, but I assume probably in the house as well.
Well, I think probably Franny and Mubi were the two that affected me the most, because what I really admire about cats is that they just kind of roll with the punches. They just don't know the meaning of problems or handicaps. They just go forward with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Franny had a lot of problems when we first got her, and she's turned into a shy but really, really nice house cat. And there's a couple chapters in the book about Mubi when she had to get one of those Elizabethan collar cones.
Yeah.
And what amazed me is that in the beginning, she couldn't even walk with this cone.
Mm-hmm.
It kept catching on the rug, and she got caught under chairs. But she actually turned it into an advantage. She when she wanted us, she would knock on the door if we were behind a closed door with the cone.
Yeah.
Sounded like a woodpecker, and
sure.
She tricked me into spoiling her more. She tricked me into holding her food dish.
Yeah.
And so we ended up calling her cone her funnel of happiness, because she actually became kind of this bionic super cat.
Right, and she was very clever. Yeah.
Yeah, so I really admire that about cats.
Absolutely, yeah. So, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is author Bob Tart, whose new book is Kitty Cornered. And, you know, yeah, the whole thing with Mubi with that, and then, of course, she, you know, before she had turned this thing around to totally wield it against you and Linda, she also was a cat that, like many do, that like to drink out of the faucet, but I guess at one point the cone and the faucet had kind of an unfortunate connection, and she was sort of stuck, I guess, but that was when she was still on the low end of the learning curve with her Elizabethan collar, I suppose.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. She would jump up on the sink to get a drink, and we didn't want her doing that anymore because she was, you know, getting up in years at that point. So I would hold her water dish whenever I could, but she would still hop up on the sink. And one night she did that and hopped down, and I'm just glad we were there and attentive, because her leg got caught in the drawer pull.
Yeah.
And, you know, we heard this terrible sound, and I ran and pulled her out, and she was hanging at such a bad angle, I was really, really concerned. But she just walked off and checked her the next day. She was fine, you know,
sure.
No problem at all.
And I'd be remiss if we got all the way through our conversation without touching on this. I mean, without giving too much away, there's a part of the book that involves you and an animal communicator, and then as part of that, sort of you trying your hand as an animal communicator yourself. Maybe you could just sort of talk a little bit about that.
Well, I have a friend who is an author named Kathleen Sherman, and I had read a book that she wrote from the animal's point of view, and I thought it was a pretty amazing book. It was real fun and real funny, and when she was emailing me, she actually kind of confided in me, although she's public with it now, that she hears the animals talking to her, that she's an animal communicator. I didn't really think much of that or put much stock in it, but I was curious about the backstory of Franny, of what happened to Franny before she came to us, so she told me to email her a photo. And so she had a lot to say about where she thought Franny came from, but the thing that amazed me was she said, I'm seeing in Franny's picture, and it was just a picture of Franny. She said, I'm seeing this yellow and white cat who is a thorn in Franny's side. Does that mean anything to you? Well, that was shortly after we got the yellow and white cat, Tina,
mm-hmm.
who was Franny's nemesis for a while. So I was pretty amazed and, you know, blown away by that she would be able to get that out of the photograph, because I had never mentioned, you know, the other cats to her. I just sent her the picture of Franny and just wanted to see where she would go from there. So, you know, that made me think more about the other things she had told me, too.
Sure, sure. And then at least for a time, as you describe it in the book, you sort of decide, hey, well, let me give this animal communication, the communicator thing, a whirl myself.
I did, and I have to admit I was sick at the time, so my normal resistance was down, and I was taking pain pills because I had shingles and a nasty thing. And I was laying in bed one night, and now Franny was a cat that at that time wouldn't even come near me. If I was lucky, she might lay down next to the bed, but that was about it. And I suddenly had this vision of Franny laying on my chest and letting me pet her. And it was just so clear And I just wrote it off to delirium from my illness.
Right.
But the very next day, I stayed home from work a week, and the very next day I was napping even more than usual, and I felt a cat come up onto the bed and lay on my chest, and it was Franny. It was just absolutely shocking, and just like in the little vignette that I had seen, she let me pet her. She has hardly done that since. So I think that...
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because it sounded, you know, obviously in the book it was a singular moment, but it's interesting that this much time later, that's still the case.
Yeah, I think maybe she's done it twice since then, and this was 3 years ago that this happened.
Wow.
So, and also while I was sick was the one and only time I was sleeping upstairs here because I didn't want to, you know, keep Linda awake all night.
Mm-hmm.
And for a couple nights, Franny, who always slept on the porch or, you know, hidden in the living room, actually camped out in the doorway of the bedroom where I was sleeping. And, you know, I really think she did that because she was concerned about me.
Yeah, isn't it amazing when they exhibit, especially whether they're slightly kooky or not, when they exhibit, you know, true concern in that way, and they just...
Yeah, it's rare because, especially with our parrots, but with our cats, too, more than anything, if we're suffering from something, they seem more annoyed than sympathetic because... You know, if we're down with a cold or some injury or something, we're not quite doing enough for them.
Right, right. Shake a leg. Where's the usual service here? Now,
yeah.
Bob, we're sort of almost at the end of our time, but that what you just raised reminded me of something I wanted to ask early on when we ran down the overall animal population. So there's not a whole lot in the book about concerns over a house full of cats residing alongside you know, parrots and ducks and hens and geese and stuff. I mean, is that chiefly because there just has been so little incident in the way that a lot of folks, you know, would imagine the way that cats and anything sort of in the bird family sometimes make for an unpleasant collision?
Well, there is a chapter in the book called Living in a Walled City, and it's all about our efforts to keep the cats out of the dining room, which is the bird room, because we had a door there that worked pretty well until we got so many cats and so many smart cats. So the reason they coexist so well is because of a door. So we don't let the cats in the room. But I have to say our cats are smart, and they know that the birds are off limit. Even Franny, the stray cat who killed birds outside because, you know, she needed to live to eat them, she understood instantly when she came into the house that the birds inside were under our protection.
Sure.
So
yeah.
We don't let them together.
Right. No. And that's the thing. I knew about the door, but I also figure, okay, some of them go outside. There's birds outside. And just generally, anytime that, you know, you have, you know, animals sort of, something can happen. Somebody cracks the lock, the barrier. Somebody's looking, distracted by something. Next thing you know, there's a little beginning of an incident, but it seemed like it was fairly, incident free, given the...
Well, the only one who's terrorized is the cats. When my wife's African gray parrot, Dusty, he will come out, and usually the cats are, put in separate rooms, but he will come out and go marching down the front hallway, clicking his beak menacingly and muttering.
Yeah.
And if there's a cat around, the cat will clear out fast because he's very intimidated.
Sure.
I also want to mention all our cats are indoor cats now. We have it's too dangerous for them.
Oh, good.
Too dangerous for the wildlife, and it's just better for everybody, and they've adapted fine.
Oh, that's great. Good,
yeah,
good.
Even Franny. Franny has not made a fuss about it.
Oh, wow. Great.
So a lot of our worries are over.
Yeah. Well, no, I just, when I was a little kid, we had a, this is how I sort of stepped into the weird animal world myself, but we had a minor bird, and of course we had cats as well, and, the cats quickly learned, if you're trying to reach into that cage or check something out, just how fast and aggressively a beak can move, and, they quickly stopped putting their paws anywhere near there. So,
I bet they did.
Yeah. So, Bob, we're just kind of at the end of our time here, but again, we've been speaking with Bob Tarte. It's T-A-R-T-E. So his website is bobtarte.com. The new book is Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. And Bob's also on Facebook and Twitter. And Bob, good luck with the book. Great, as always, to speak with you. And we'll look forward to the next book. Maybe that's going to be dog-related in some way. Who knows?
You never know what will happen.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Duncan.
All right, thank you.
And the first chapter is on my website.
Great. All right, thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals. The show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win, and there'll be a prize. A copy of Bob Tart's new book, Kitty Corner, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. In a moment, we'll speak with Glenn Hatchell about the shelter dog play groups he conducts. Meanwhile, let's name that animal tune on Talking Animals. Guess. We'll take a quick guess, otherwise we'll take them off the air. We made it a little harder today because it's a cool book. We, you know, we gotta work for it a little bit. All right, let's try it. Hi, you're on Talk Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, can you give me the sound again? I'm a little deaf. So you play me the sound again?
The song?
The sound. It was a sound, right?
Well, it was a song. The idea was name that animal tune.
Okay, I missed the tune. Yeah, I missed that.
Oh, okay. All right, well, we'll try again next week then. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, but if anyone else did recognize it, wanted to call in, we'll take that off the air. But right now... Oh, I got somebody else calling. All right, we'll take you off the air. Right now, we want to introduce, or reintroduce, depending on... well, this is Glenn Hatchell. Glenn, how are you?
Hey, Duncan, doing great. How are you?
Good. So you're owner of Home Buddies, Tampa... What, Northeast? Is that the full designation?
Yeah, it's not Nebraska,
clarify.
It's Northeast.
Okay, yeah, right.
And legally, actually, Kelly is the owner, just in case somebody comes through. She is actually the owner. But
okay.
Anyway.
Cool. And full disclosure,
a
colleague, of course, here at WMNF, longtime host of the Monday morning show, who recently shifted over to the Thursday morning show from 6 to 9 a.m. Right here on good old 88.5. But that's not really why we're here chatting today. So tell us about the playgroups. Tell us about how this began and what it involves.
Well, it started about 3 months ago is when we finally put it, got things going. Every morning, we, for about 3 hours, we take a, basically rotate dogs in and out of playgroups. We've got four different play yards at the Humane Society, so we, start out with usually anywhere from 10 to 20 dogs to begin with, and we will, we match them based on size, age, energy level, you know, things along that line. Having four play yards, we're able to also manage the energy that's in the group and ruin them in and out. And the great thing for the dogs is they're not stuck in the kennel all day long.
Right.
You know, where before we were doing this, the number of times they went out during the day depended on the number of volunteers that were there that day.
Sure.
Sometimes only once or twice a day, but now every morning they're all out for, if they're eligible, if they're not in any sort of medical situation at that point, they're out for anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half out in the play yards playing with anywhere from 6 to 10 other dogs in the yard.
Wow.
So what?
How many days a week does this happen?
7 days a week.
The play groups happen
right.
7 days? Okay,
seven
great.
Days a week.
Wow.
And now I don't know how we're going to handle it when it gets into rainy season and really
right.
gets going. But
sure.
Yeah, so we get them in there. So the great things for the dogs is that, you know, that hour of playing with other dogs, they are burning mental energy. They're burning physical energy. So
mm-hmm.
they're tired,
yeah.
you know, which is great for
we
a dog.
Like
that's
that.
Gonna, exactly.
Sure.
A tired dog is a good dog.
Right.
And one of the great things from the Humane Society aspect, everything we do is to increase the adoptability of the dogs. So having the dogs out there in play groups, the ones that are puppies, so many of them that are, you know, especially the ones that are around 6 or 7 months old, they probably, chances are, haven't grown up with other dogs,
right.
grown up with other dogs around.
Sure.
So they don't know how to send the signals, how to communicate with other dogs saying, back off, don't do that.
Uh-huh.
And conversely, how to recognize one of the other dogs saying, I really don't want you in my face like that.
Right.
So getting out in the play groups, the dogs that haven't had that socialization get that socialization.
Because
we see
great.
So many times a dog will come in, and for the first 3 times they're in play group, they literally pin themselves up against a fence waiting to get out of there because they're fearful of what's going on. And by the second, third, fourth time, they're in the middle of this in the life of the party playing. So
wow.
the dogs are coming around, and
yeah.
we're learning about these dogs, they're great with all other dogs. These dogs, yeah, they like some dogs, but not so much. So we're able to provide more information to potential adopters as
right.
well in placing the dogs in the right homes, which is going to reduce the return rate,
sure,
which
so
is
they,
a big issue for any shelter or rescue.
Yeah.
Somebody takes a dog 2 months later saying it's not working out for me.
Right. Too nuts, not nuts enough, too dull, whatever it might be. So you have all those
yeah, just makes us smarter about what's
sure.
going on with the dog.
And other than the medical thing that you mentioned earlier, what else qualifies the dogs? Or if, since you're doing it every day, does pretty much everybody who's not on sort of medical disability for that moment get to participate in the play?
Absolutely.
Groups? Wow.
Yeah. If they are 6 months or older and they're not on the heartworm treatments, well, the ones that have to be excluded, if they're undergoing heartworm medication, heartworm treatments, they can't, they've got to stay calm. They
sure.
can't go out. If they've had surgery, such as being fixed or something within the last, usually give them about 7 days, and then other than that, every dog we try to get into play group so we can find out, are they good with other dogs? We do get some that come in there. We find out they've got some dog-on-dog issues. So what we're able to do then is start using different tools to try to help them overcome those dog-on-dog issues.
So is that more of a one-on-one thing that kind of breaks off from the play group when
exactly.
you identify those?
Yep. Yeah. And we start working with those individually one-on-one or start using certain tools that are out such as, you know, there's, well, I'm not putting a plug in, but like thunder shirts. With some of them, we'll try using the thunder shirt, which helps calm dogs down.
Sure.
We'll put a thunder shirt on a dog to see if that will bring its energy level or if its wildness down a little bit
mm-hmm.
to where they can help to overcome their dog-on-dog issues.
Wow.
Or if we need to muzzle them, I'll put a muzzle on them and put them out there to make them realize it's okay to be around other dogs.
Yeah.
So.
And has there been any way, I mean, it's obviously, you know, probably not long enough maybe to really do this, even if you could otherwise, but is there any way to sort of measure what?
Great question.
Okay.
There was, and I like a lot of anecdotal things, but I'm one to where, you know, with my background in business and stuff, it's like, give me a really study.
Yes.
There was a study done, I think in 2009 when it was completed that measured cortisol levels. And cortisol is a hormone that's released when you're stressed. Humans release it. Dogs release it. What they did was a cortisol study and determined that dogs that participate in play groups have lower levels of cortisol than dogs who don't. Now, there are those who will say, that's just, you know, that's not a real measurement of stress. Well, it may not be complete, but at least it's one little
indicator. Something you can measure.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is. But anecdotally, you can see these dogs just change and just become more balanced. And that's what we all want, a more balanced dog.
Right. And so then I'm sure as you know, regular days or adoption events, whatever, those are probably more appealing. And again, you could say, well, if you're looking for somebody really, you know, kind of quiet, mellow because it's this kind of household, that's
exactly.
not for you. Let me steer you over towards this guy
right.
or this
right.
gal.
Yep, and we usually end up with somewhere 40 to 60 dogs every morning that will end up running through play groups. The big
wow.
dogs as well as the little dogs. We'll even get the little ones out, you know, the 4-pound. It's great to see a 4-pound chihuahua run around the yard chasing after a Jack Russell Terrier or something. You know, so
wow.
we can tell it about all the different animals that are there.
That's so great. And again, for the socialization, I mean, you know, what could they face when they're adopted that, you know, they wouldn't have experienced and probably enjoyed mostly, notwithstanding a few rough experiences, but that's part of it too.
Right.
So, well, that's great. So now how many days a week do you, yourself conduct these
I do things? It 5 days a week.
Wow.
Yep.
That's great. That's a huge commitment.
It would have been, we could have done six, but I've got a thing on Thursday mornings that I didn't really want to give up.
All right. But, cool little radio show right here at WMNF. But,
So we started about 3 months ago. Actually, the person who I trained under spent about a month out in Colorado in her behavior modification department was one of the first people back in 2005 to start doing play groups in the shelter environment. And they're right now, I've been trying to find out a number, but don't know it, but I think it's probably somewhere between 20 and 50 shelters in the entire nation that even does this.
That was
so
my next question.
Kudos to the Humane Society of Tampa Bay for looking at it and saying, you know, as Pam Backer, our director of shelter operations said, you know, the dogs have had the answer all along. We just didn't listen to them.
Right.
And that
right.
was really the transformational moment for her that says, we have got to start doing this.
So I take it from what you said, with that being such a small number, that that in this area, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay is the only.
I think the SPCA in Largo does play groups as well.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And
but I imagine
Hillsborough County Animal Services, I know, has tried it. I don't know whether they're doing it on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm sure it's one of those things that more and more will embrace it as resources allow. I'm sure
exactly.
It's like anything
well,
else.
And that's the key to it, is resources allow.
Yeah,
and I looked at it, and it's like, you know, I can learn so much. It's going to benefit me and what I do in other areas.
Sure.
Plus what it's going to do for the dogs. It's like, why would I not step up to do this? So when they said, let's go with it, I said, I'll take the ball. I'll be the dog that grabs the ball and runs around the yard.
Yeah.
With it, so.
Now I'm sure there's people listening and think, well, I'd like to get my dog in that play group, but obviously it's strictly for the dogs that are at the Humane Society.
Right now, but we're looking down the road about how we, for somebody that adopts a dog from the Humane Society and starts having issues, using play groups to bring them back in.
Sure.
And again, it all comes back to reducing the return rates.
Right. Cool. Well, Glenn, this sounds awesome. I love the idea, and I love that it's obviously working,
and both scientifically,
but especially anecdotally. So, good, successful adoptions. That's what we're about, right?
That's what it's all about.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for
coming
in to talk to
Thanks
us about
for having
it.
Me
and
on.
Again, tomorrow morning, 6 to 9, every Thursday, it's the morning show with Glenn Hatchell. So, you can hear him that way too. All right. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you, Duncan.
Okay, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. We'll be back next Wednesday, May 30th, when our guest will be Dr. Marty Becker, the veterinarian who appears regularly on Good Morning America and the Dr. Oz Show, and whose latest book is Your Cat, The Owner's Manual. He'll be in studio with us here, and while we'll chiefly be discussing the book and cats, perhaps we can persuade him to take some calls from listeners with questions about their animals. So I hope you'll join me next week for that. Also, hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. It's all at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Busson. It's my thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott, the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Today, he's presenting sort of a bittersweet program featuring tunes by artists we recently lost, Donna Summer, Chuck Brown, Robin Gibb, and Donald Duck. And it's Donald Duck Dunn. And so check out. It's WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next week, 11 a.m. for Talking Animals. NPR News is next. Stay tuned for Scott.
NPR News in Washington.